Let's begin. So today's daf is Lamed Aleph. So we left off two lines down. Tan Rabbanan. We'll say a very interesting sugya today. So the Gemara says the following. Tan Rabbanan. Tan Rabbanan. Sukkah Gizula, a stolen sukkah. Or for that matter, one who goes ahead and makes a sukkah in Rosh Hashanah. The Rashi points out, hunami gezel harabim. So making a sukkah in the Rosh Hashanah is also a form of theft. Why? Because the Rosh Hashanah belongs to everyone. And as such, no one person could commandeer the Rosh Hashanah for their own sukkah use. So a person either steals a sukkah, or a person makes a sukkah in Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Eliezer posel. Rabbi Eliezer says such a sukkah is possible. The Chachamim machshir, and the Chachamim say the sukkah is kosher. So what's going on over here? Amar Rav Nachman machlokes b'shetokev eschavero v'hotzio misukaso. Now both say, what is the case of the stolen sukkah? So the case of the stolen sukkah is Reuven's my next door neighbor. He has a very nice sukkah. I go over, I grab him by the lapel, I throw him out of the sukkah, and I lock the door. That's the case of now, as opposed to what? What is the Gemara Karcha? As opposed to a case of where I actually, let's say he has one of those, pop-up sukkahs, and I just lift up the sukkah and move it somewhere else. You'll see why the Gemara is framing the case that way. Rabbi Eliezer goes according to his reasoning, because what does Rabbi Eliezer say? We saw this 2 days ago. The Amar ein adam yotze chovaso bisukaso shel chavero. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that you cannot be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah with your friend's sukkah. I.e. Rabbosai, the halacha is, Rabbi Lez says, you can't use a sukkah shul, this was on Chav Zayin. You must have your own sukkah. Basukos, chaga sukkos ta'ase l'cha, says Rabbi Lez, it must be your own sukkah, and your sukkah for 7 days. Therefore, again, Rabbi Lez says, that if you went ahead, the ein adam yotzi, the echovas, was sukkah so shachavero, ikarka nigzalas. Now, Rabbosai, we will see that there is a fundamental machlokas as to whether or not real property can ever be stolen. Look at Rashi. I karka nizeles kilomer im yesh ala karka toras gezel kishar metalten la'amor b'ches kasa gazlan. If you hold that real property can be stolen, sukkah gizulahim, then at the end of the day, this is a stolen sukkah. And according to, because Rabbi Sa'i, you can remember, anything that is mechubar l'karka, anything that is attached to the ground, has the status of the ground itself. Therefore, lemaisa, the sukkah will have a status of karka. So says Rabbi Eliezer, if you say that that real property can be stolen, that is a stolen sukkah. And I will say, if it's a stolen sukkah, then what? Then lemaisa, again, it's not yours. Because it's not yours, you cannot go ahead and fulfill your obligation. Ve'inami karka einu nigzelas. And even if you hold that real property cannot be stolen, at most still, sukkah she'ulihi. It is still, quote-unquote, a borrowed sukkah. Meaning, I will say, now what does it mean it's a borrowed sukkah? I just threw Reuven out of it. Essentially, halachically, if something cannot be stolen, then by definition, what? It's, quote-unquote, being borrowed. It's being borrowed. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, either way, such a sukkah would be invalid. Why? Because Rabbi Eliezer says, you need your own sukkah for the Yom Tov of sukkah. Say again, if you hold that real property can be stolen, it's a stolen sukkah, and it's not yours, and you're not yotzei. If you say property, real property cannot be stolen, karka ain't an exalus, then it's a quote-unquote borrowed sukkah. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says that you must have your own sukkah, the sukkah must be yours for all 7 days, you're not yotzei either. What about the Rabbanan? Now, so remember, the Rabbanan hold that you are yotzei the mitzvah of sukkah in a sukkah gizula. The Rabbanan go according to their already established reasoning. What do they say? The Amri, Adam yotzei edei chavaso b'sukaso shel chavero. Say, first of all, because the Rabbanan hold that you can be yotzei the mitzvah of sukkah in the sukkah of your friend. That's number one. They don't hold of the drasha of chagasukos ta'aselecha, but rather, again, you don't even have to build your own sukkah at all. If you want to be a sukkah shner throughout the entire Yom Tov, that's your prerogative. Furthermore, the Rabbanan hold, the karka eina nigzelas. Rabbosai, again, the Rabbanan hold that real property cannot be stolen. Look at Rashi for just a moment over here. So Rashi says, Rabbanan l'tamayu, da amri yotze adam besukah sheino shalo, b'shu'ula, b'svirle, the karka eina nigzelas, the Rabbanan hidamri baraka gozel, The karka ain't an exalas. So I'll say again, this is a fundamental shita over here, that real property cannot be stolen. Now, the logic for real property can't be stolen is because in order for something to be stolen, according in the view of the Rabbanon, it has to be movable. It has to be movable. There have to be what's called kinyane gezela, the ability to acquire stolen property, which often requires the property to be able to go into the reshus, go into the domain of the gazlan. Now, you could acquire real property in different ways by ultimately doing something with the land, some kind of chazak on the karka, but chazal hold karka ain't an exeles. V'sukah sh'ulihi. Now, both say, listen to this. If karka ain't an exeles, if real property cannot be stolen, that means that what? That it's a borrowed sukkah. Again, remember, we're using that term lightly. Sukkah sh'ulihi. So this is the fundamental machlokes from the Rabbanon. According, what it really comes out to is two pieces. Number one is, do you need your own sukkah over the course of Yom Tov? Rabbi Eliezer says the sukkah must be yours. Therefore, by definition, according to Rabbi Eliezer, whether or not you hold karka and exelis or ain't an exelis is really irrelevant. Because if the karka is stolen, then ultimately, again, it's a stolen sukkah. If the karka is borrowed, then it's a borrowed sukkah. But either way, it's not yours. According to Rabbanon, they hold karka ain't an exelis. Karka ain't an exelis. Real property cannot be stolen. And therefore, the Maisei, you can be Yotzei because this is a stolen sukkah. It's a borrowed sukkah. Aval, gozel eitzim besicheich bohem. But Rabbosai, if you stole wood, this is gozel eitzim. Now, I'm not stealing a sukkah, I'm stealing wood. Besicheich bohem. Rabbosai, this phraseology is a little bit misleading. Sichich bohem over here doesn't mean you used it for schach. Schichich bohem means you used it to build a sukkah. See, if I stole property and used it to build a sukkah, divrei hakol ein lo ela demei eitzim. Everyone agrees that what? That the thief has acquired the wood. The thief has acquired the wood. And the only thing he is obligated to do is pay the value of the wood to the person from whom he stole it. Which would then mean what? That such a sukkah is indeed a valid sukkah. Look at Rashi. Aval gozel eitzim v'sichech bohem. Ein zu lo gezula v'lo sh'ula. This is not a stolen sukkah, nor is it a borrowed sukkah. Why not? Dikananhu b'shinoi maisa v'shinoi Hashem. Because I will say, in this case, the thief has acquired the wood through shinoi maisa. Shinoi maisa means, shinoi maisa is that you've changed it. You've changed the object from wood to a sukkah, v'shinoi Hashem. And you've also changed its name from wood to sukkah. Va'od mishum takonas hashavim in otzarach listra b'niyah el yachzudam. Rabbos, this is very important. There's a concept called, the Gemara is going to say this later on, but I'll just say this quickly outside now. There's a concept called takonas hashavim. Takonas hashavim means the following. Chazal made many enactments in order to facilitate people doing tshuva. And one of the things that Chazal understood is if tshuva becomes very difficult, people won't do it. So for example, the Gemara tells a story about a man who was a career thief. And he woke up one day and he decided, you know what? He told his wife, honey, I want to do tshuva. And his wife said to him, you fool. If you do tshuva, you won't even have a belt buckle to your name. Apparently, he was a very successful thief. So everything he had was stolen. So she said to him, you're never going to... So one of the things that Chazal pointed out is if I stole a beam of wood and I built it into my house. Now, technically speaking, if I steal an item and the item is in existence, I have to go ahead and return it. Chazal said, if I stole a beam and I built it into the structure of my home, I don't have to return the beam. Rather, what do I have to do? There's just the value. Why? Because if you tell me that in order to do tshuva, I have to go ahead and take apart my house, so chances are what? I'm not doing tshuva. So it's a fascinating insight also into human psychology. People want to do the right thing, but people are not really willing to exert themselves. I want to do the right thing if it's easy. If it's difficult, then you know what? That's going to be much more of a challenge. So takanas hashavim literally means the takana, the enactment for the ones, for the penitent ones, for the ones who want to do tshuva. So essentially, the Gemara is saying over here is the following. If I stole wood, the machlokes in Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim is only what? When I stole a sukkah. So I took someone else's structure. I kicked him out. Remember, the Gemara said, I took Reuven by the lapel. I threw him out of the sukkah. I'm living in a sukkah. I locked the door behind me. So machlokes, Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, Rabbi Eliezer says, it's not good because at the end of the day, the sukkah is not yours. Chachamim say, it is good. I mean, good mean, I'm Yosei sukkah. Because again, sukkah doesn't have to be mine. And B, karka in an exelis. However, what if I stole Reuven's wood? Reuven has a pile of lumber in his backyard. I stole it and I made a sukkah. So in that case, the Gemara says, everyone will agree that first of all, I am Yotzei, I am Yotze. Why? Because there are certain kinyani gzela. I acquire the items because once I build that wood into a sukkah, then what? The halacha becomes I am no longer obligated to return the wood. I'm obligated to return the value of the wood. Why? Takana shavim. Because whenever stolen property is built into a structure, even if in this case it's a temporary structure, the ma'isegen chazal were not matriach, the ganav, the thief, to deconstruct his item and return the wood, he just simply has to go ahead and return the money. So lemaisa again, the sukkah, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, would be good because I have acquired that wood and therefore the sukkah is mine. So the Gemara says, Mimai, how do we know this? Midiktani. Now, also when the Gemara asks Mimai, what the Gemara is going back for just a moment. Rashi says, Mimai, the bigzelas karka pligi b'tamid the shula. How do we know that the machlokes in Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanon is really about karka nigzelas or in nigzelas, and whether or not you could be yotze with a borrowed sukkah? To which the Gemara says, Midiktani, dum yodurush sarabim. Because the case that the Braisa brought out was the case that equated the stolen sukkah with Rush Sarabim. Marush Sarabim lav didehu, just like the Rush Sarabim does not belong to me. Af sukkah nami lav karka didehu. So to the sukkah is also a case of where it did not belong to me. So Rabbi said, the Gemara is just supporting the idea that we said before, that the machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanon was in a case of a stolen sukkah that sits atop the ground of my friend. And therefore the fundamental machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanon is karka nigzeles or ainan nigzeles. Hahi safta. There was an old lady, an old woman. Now what happens? The asi lekameid Rav Nachman, who came before Rav Nachman, and she said, Amrale, she said to him, Reish galusa, Vikulu Rabbanon de Reish Galusa, Besuka Gizula Havu Yasvi. And she said, the Reish Galusa, I also remember the Reish Galusa was the head of Babylonian Jewry, and all the rabbis of the house of the Reish Galusa are all living in a stolen sukkah. Now, what was she positing? So what was she claiming? If you look at Rashi says over here, Hahi Safta, the Gazlami Mani Avdi Reish Galusa, Eitzim Isichuban. So this old lady is coming before Rav Nachman, and she's saying the house of the Reish Galusa, right? They stole, somebody from the Reish Galusa stole my wood, and they stole my wood, and they built it into a sukkah, and they're all sitting in that sukkah, and therefore the Reish Galusa and the rabbis of the Reish Galusa's house, none of them are yotzim in the sukkah. They're sitting in a sukkah gzula. So what happened? V'lo ashkachba. V'lo ashkachba literally means that he did not pay attention to her. Now, what she wanted is her wood back. So she wanted Rav Nachman to order the Beis Din, to order the house of the Reish Galusa, to deconstruct the sukkah, and to return the wood. Rav Nachman did not pay attention to that particular claim. Amrale, she said to him, Isisa da havile la avua, tlas umeya vitimni sari avdi. A woman whose father had 318 servants, tzavcha kamaych, who is screaming before you, v'lo ashkechi suba, and you're not going to pay attention to her. Now, Rashi points out, who is this woman that her father had 318 servants? She was saying, I'm a daughter of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, the Torah said, right, had 318 servants. So she's saying, what? I am a daughter of Avram Avinu, and you're not going to pay attention to me. She was frustrated. She was upset that Rav Nachman did not seem to be paying attention to her claim. Amar lehu, Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman said, Pa'isahida. Pa'isahida, if you look at Rashi, Kolonis. Literally, this woman is a complainer. Ve'ein la ella demei eitzim bilva, because I've told her before, apparently this was not the first time this came up, I've told her before, she is not entitled to get the wood back, but rather, what is she entitled to? She's entitled to the value of the wood. So apparently she really wanted the wood. I don't know, maybe it was her grandfather's wood, whatever it was. She wanted the wood. Lemaisa again, all she was entitled to was the money. So look at Rashi, Rabbosai. Rashi says, ella demei eitzim, So what we said before, that Lamais, again, once you build stolen property into a structure, again, remember, the interesting part about sukkah is, for the 7 days of sukkahs, sukkah becomes a permanent structure. Even though, again, it's a diras arai, it becomes a diras kavua, because it is where you live throughout the 7 days. Once you build it into the sukkah, by definition, again, you are not obligated to deconstruct the structure in order to give back the wood. Hai kishura, let's take all questions at the end. Hai kishura de mitlalasa de gzula. If you have a beam that was built into the sukkah, that was stolen. So a stolen beam built into the sukkah, Avdili Rabbanan Takanto Mishum Takanas Morish. So Rabbosai, the rabbis extended the Takana of Takanas Morish to this particular structure. So Rabbosai, again, Takanas Morish literally means the Takana, the enactment of the beam. That's what we just said before. That's the case of where the thief steals a beam, builds it into the house, wants to now do tshuva. Chazal did not obligate him to go ahead and deconstruct the house, remove the beam in order to return it. Rather, he just has to give the value. So now what the Gemara is saying over here is that Lemaisa, if you stole material and you built it into a sukkah, that same takhanas marish, or what we call takhanas shavim, applies to this case as well. Look at Rashi. Mipnei takhanas marish. V'lo amrinan inkan hefsid meruba. V'yastir sukkaso. The mitzvah mashvi leit kol shiva kebinyan keva. Rabbi said this is a very important Rashi. You see, one might have thought that the takhanas marish, no one it applies. It applies to my house, because if I steal a beam and I build it into my house, to tell me that I have to construct my house, that's a major deconstruction. That's a major hefsin, and therefore Chazal did not obligate me to do that. But a sukkah, what's the big deal? What's okay? I have maybe an hour of work that I have to do. So what's the big deal? I'll take off the schach. I'll remove the beam. I'll get a new beam. So I might have thought that I'd be obligated to kamash malon, that for the yom tov of sukkahs, the sukkah is treated as a diras keva. Is treated as an established structure, no different than a home. Therefore, the takanas marish applies over here as well. So the Gemara says pshita. That's obvious. Maishna me'etzim. Why should this be any different than the case of the wood? Now, boss, I remember again, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following. We just said beforehand that if I steal wood, instead of stealing Reuven's sukkah, I steal Reuven's wood, I build myself a sukkah with Reuven's wood, what's the halacha? My sukkah, and I'm only obligated to, not only, but I'm obligated to what? To compensate him for the value of the wood. So the Gemara says, okay, if you already said that by the case of the wood, why do you have to restate this now where? By the case of the beam. Meaning, obviously, if you set it by the wood, it applies to the beam as well. To which the Gemara says, "Ma'od teima eitzim shchichi, aval hay lo shchicha imalo." I might have thought that maybe when you steal wood, wood is common. Wood is common. And therefore, again, that's why we let the thief keep the wood. Because it would be a little bit of a tircha for the thief to deconstruct the sukkah. Let him keep the wood. And l'maisik, let him compensate the owner of the wood for the wood. But by a beam, again, I'm about to say, I guess, you know, a structural beam is a much bigger to-do. So, you know, you can't just walk into the forest and find a structural beam. So I might have thought that something like that, which is much more significant, lemaisa, again, perhaps the thief would not acquire it, and he'd have to go ahead and deconstruct his sukkah and give it back to the owner. Kamashon, that is not the case. Kamashon, the takanas hashavim, Takanas Hashavim, and Takanas Marish still says that he could keep the beam as well. Rashi says, well, okay, fine. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, Hani Mili Bigo Shiva. The Rabbi will say, when does this apply? This applies during the 7 days of Yom Tov. And he will say, again, so if I went ahead and I stole the beam, or I stole the wood, and I built it into a sukkah, over the 7 days of Yom Tov, so what happened? Now the owner comes to me over the seven. He brings me to Beis Din on Chol HaMoed. So on Chol HaMoed, Beis Din does not tell me that I have to go ahead and deconstruct my sukkah, because the mice is like a diras keva, it's like an established structure. However, aval baser shiva, but after the 7 days of Yom Tov, then what? Hadar be'enei. Rabosai, this is interesting. So let's say then, Reuven comes, Isruchag, he brings me to Beis Din, and he says, you stole my beam. In that case, says the Gemara, then what? You'd have to return the beam. Why? Very interesting. Why? Because after the Yom Tov of Sukkis, so the sukkah is no longer considered to be a diras keva. It's no longer considered to be an established structure. And because it's considered to be an established structure, takanas marish or takanas hashavim does not apply to it. Takanas hashavim, the idea, or takanas marish, this idea that you don't have to deconstruct the structure to return a beam, rather you just give the value, is only an established permanent structure. After Sukkis, it's an impermanent temporal structure. You would be obligated to deconstruct, meaning even if you're one of those guys who leaves up your sukkah year to year, not because I'm lazy, chas v'shalom, but because it's more efficient, right? Then what? Still, after Sukkis, that structure is temporary in nature and would have to be deconstructed to return the beam. So the Gemara now goes right. So we'll say, I'll just tell you quickly, you know what, let me finish the daf, and then I'm going to go back, just tell you the halacha l'maisa, because the Shulchan Aruch does comment on this case of the stolen sukkah, but we'll come back to it. So the Gemara says the following. Tana, Yavesh Pasul. Rabosai, we learned before that a lulav, we're transitioning now to lulav. Remember again, Rabosai, sukkah is not the topic of this perek, although it's exciting. The only reason, again, we got into it was why? Because we started a discussion about lulav hagazel, about a stolen lulav. So once we started speaking about a stolen lulav, then we got into the case of the stolen sukkah. But now we're back to our regular subject over here. Tana, yavesh pasul, as a dried lulav is pasul. Rabbi Huda says that it's kosher. Amar Rava, Rava says, Machlokes belulav drabanon. Excuse me, Machlokes belulav. So Rava says, the Machlokes about Yavesh is a Machlokes in lulav. Drabanon savri, because the rabbis hold, Makshinon lulav la esrog, ma esrog boy hoder, af lulav boy hoder. So both say, the Drabanon hold, that what? That we equate lulav and esrog. Now, why would we equate lulav and esrog? Ulakachtem lochem bayom arishon, pre eitz hoder, ka post tamarim. Right, so what happens? The Torah discusses lulav and esrog in the same pasuk. That's called the hekish. That's called the comparison, or smuchin, or juxtapositions. So the mice again, the rabbanon say that all of the laws of esrog essentially apply to lulav as well. Namely, just as esrog must be hadar, that's why the Torah calls it a pre-eitz hadar, and must be beautiful. So too, again, lulav must be beautiful as well. And therefore, again, what? And therefore, the mice, if the lulav is yavesh, it will not be kosher. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda says, no, lo makshinan lulav la esrog. Rabbi Huda says that we do not compare or equate lulav to esrog, and therefore, again, although esrog must be hadar, esrog must be beautiful, lulav does not have to be. And therefore, according to Rabbi Huda, even a lulav yavesh, even a dried out lulav, is going to be kosher for the mitzvah. However, aval be esrog, divrei hakol hadar ba'inan. But Rabbosai, in Rava's view, both the Rabbanon and Rabbi Huda agree that what? That esrog must be beautiful. There's a din of hidr, there's a din of hadr, there's a din of beauty by esrog, although the machlokes says if it applies by lulav as well. Okay, so the Gemara says, ubelulav loboy, hold on to that for just a little bit, we'll come back to esrog in just a little bit. Ubelulav loboy, is that true that lulav does not require hidr? So the Gemara says, ubelulav loboy, Rabbi Huda hadr, does Rabbi Huda not require hadr by lulav? But hadran, we learned, Rabbi Huda says, ya'agdenu milamalo. Rabbi Huda holds Rabbi Huda said in the Mishnah that you should tie the lulav on the top, that you should bind the lulav together. So Gemara says, my time, why is that? Lav mishum debay hadar, is that not because Rabbi Huda wants the lulav to be beautiful, and that by binding it together, you go ahead and beautify the mitzvah of lulav, to which the Gemara says, lo, that's actually not the reason. Kediktani time with Rabbi Huda, Omer mishum Rabbi Tarfon, kapos tmarim. No, Rabbi Huda's logic is totally different. How does the Torah refer to a lulav? Kapos tamarim. Kafos, vim haya paru yikaf senu. Rabbi said, what it teaches us is what? Kapos tamarim could also be vocalized as how? Kafos. Kafos means what? Bound or tied. From which Rabbi Huda learns that if the lulav has the danger of splitting, you should what? Or when I say splitting, I mean the leaves coming apart. Then what? Or spreading apart. Then what? You should bind it together. So therefore, according to Rabbi Huda, the idea of binding the lulav has nothing to do with hidra. It has nothing to do with beautifying the mitzvah. It's just simply part of the definition of the mitzvah because it's called kapos tamarim. Okay. V'lo boy hadar. Is that true that it doesn't require hadar by lulav? V'hatna, but we learn. Ein ogdines halulav ela bemino div Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda holds that you have to bind the lulav, and this refers specifically to binding the hadassim and the aravos and the lulav together. But you could only go ahead and bind the lulav with mino. Mino, as well, means with one of the items that are part of the bundle itself. My time, what's the reason for that? La mishum debay hadar. So why does Rabbi Huda hold that the bundle has to be bundled, that the lulav hadas has to be bundled? Is it not because hadar? Because this is a beautification of the mitzvah. Lo, deha amarava afilu b'siv v'afilu b'ikar d'dikla. No, it's not true. Why? Because Rava said, the truth is you can even bind the bundle together with what? With ivy, or with the bark of the palm tree. I will say ivy over here means the ivy that grows around the trunk of the palm tree. That's considered to be palm-like in nature, and the bark of the palm tree obviously is what? It's part of the palm tree itself. And this is okay. Why? Because it's considered to be part of the min of lulav. Because since the lulav comes from the palm tree, then ultimately, again, anything else that comes from the palm tree is considered mino. Ve'ela my taima de Rabbi Yehuda. So if that's the case, so why does Rabbi... So like, the fact that Gemara is bringing then that you could bind the lulav with these things, which don't look like everything else, indicates that what? That it's not because of hiddur. Because when you bind it with a piece of ivy, or when you go and you bind it with a piece of palm tree bark, which is not going to look all that beautiful, which is indicative that the binding is not a function of hiddur. So why does Rabbi Yehuda require that you bind it? My time, Rabbi Yehuda. Hasam dekasavar, lulav, tsarich, agud. Right? Eged, because he holds, lulav has to be bound. That's the din in lulav. It's not a din in hiddur. It's a din in the fundamental nature of the mitzvah, that these items must be bound as a collective unit. And if you use another type of item for the binding, havalahu chamisha minin. So here's what's interesting according to Rabbi Yehuda. If you use, rubber band, good. I was thinking something organic. Rope. You use something else. That's not one of the dalet minin. So then what? That's a fifth min. That's a fifth object that is now part of this bundle, which obviously is problematic. Alts baltosif. Alts adding on. Fine. So far, where the Gemara is holding right now is that the machlokis Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon is in the case of whether or not lulav requires hiddur. According to the Rabbanon, it does. And why? Why? Because the pasuk itself equates, creates hadr, the esrog, which everyone agrees requires hiddur, and lulav. Therefore, lulav requires hiddur as well. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, lulav does not require hiddur. But what we're holding right now is everyone agrees that what? Everyone agrees that esrog does require hiddur. To which the Gemara asks, ube esrog, mi boy. Does esrog really require hiddur? So the Gemara says, does Rabbi Yehuda require that the esrog be beautiful? This hiddur mitzvah. But we learned, arba'as minin shabalulav. You have four different species that are part of the lulav. It's including the esrog as part of the lulav as well. Kishem shin pochsin mehen, kach in mosif nalein. The same way that you can't add up, the same way that you can't detract, you can't take away one of the species, so too you can't add on. Lo matze esrog. Let's say again, you can't find an esrog to use on Sukkis. Lo yavi parish. You can't use a quince instead. Velo rimon or a pomegranate. Velo davar acher or anything else. We'll discuss what the havamina is, that you could substitute the lemon, or something else. We'll get into that. But the Gemara is saying is if you can't find an esrog, you can't substitute another fruit for that esrog. Furthermore, kimushin. If the object withered, ksherin, it's kosher, yveshin psulin. We're assuming now this is talking about the esrog. If the esrog withered, or if the esrog was dried up, it's pasul. Which again would seem to make sense based on the fact that what? That the esrog must be hadar. It must be beautiful. However, Rabbi Yehuda says, af yveshin. Rabbi Yehuda says, even a dried esrog will be fine. The Rabbi Yehuda again seems to indicate what? That Rabbi Yehuda holds what? That you don't require hiddur even by esrog. But Amar Rabbi Yehuda said, Amar Beis, Maisa, Rabbi Yehuda says, good. Rabbi Yehuda says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Maisa bibnei krochin, shahayu morishin eslulavehen livnei vinehen. It's interesting enough, Rabbi Yehuda says that there was an episode of Bnei Krachin. So I don't know if Krachin over here means the actual name of a place, or it's just saying over here there was a story with people in a city, right? Residents in a city who used to give over their lulavim, who used to give to their grandchildren. So we'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Bnei Krachin, it's actually true, it's just a generic term for Krach. She'ein darin amakom pardesin, they do not live in a place where there are orchards. Ve'ein dekalim mitsuyinjom. So urban dwellers often did not have unlimited access to palm trees, and as such, what would they do? They would save their lulavim year to year, to the point that apparently they would last for generations, and they would hand down lulav. You'd have to imagine what a lulav looked like when it was being handed down from grandfather to grandson. Amr lahem. Amar lo. So that actually the Mesoras Tash changes it to Amar lo Misham. Right, and Rabosai, again, remember, this is Rabbi Yehuda quoting this story. So Rabbi Yehuda just got finished saying what? Just got finished saying that even a withered esrog or a dried esrog is going to be good, and furthermore, even a dried up lulav is going to be good also. And he quotes the story. So the Rabbanon respond to him. Amrulo. They said to him, Misham Raya, you're bringing a proof from there. Ein shas hadchak raya. You can't bring a raya from a shas hadchak. You know, I will say, the Bnei Krachin didn't have access to anything else. So what happened? So they did the best of their ability. But you can't bring a raya for normative halacha from a case of extenuating circumstances. Rabbi say, but nevertheless, with the Gemara focus on katani mihas, but here's what comes out of this. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af yiveshin kshirin. Rabbi Yehuda said that even the dried one was kosher. Rabbi said, the Gemara says, my lava esrog, was Rabbi Yehuda not commenting on the esrog? Rabbi said, what's interesting is the flow of this price that the Gemara just quoted is a strange flow. Why? Because it begins by talking about the four minim. You can't have less, you can't have more. Then what does it say? If you don't have an esrog, so you can't go ahead and bring a quince or anything else instead. Then what did it say? And if it's dried up, it's kosher. Or say, if it's withered, it's kosher. If it's dried up, it's not. Rabbi Yehuda holds, even if it's dried up, it's kosher. Then Rabbi Yehuda quotes a story about lulav. So the question is, when Rabbi Yehuda says, even if it's dried up, that it's kosher, what is he referring to? The reason why it's ambiguous is because the first part of the statement was talking about esrog. The last part of the statement is talking about what? Lulav. So the Gemara at first assumes that Rabbi Yehuda's statement that even a dried item is usable for the mitzvah is referring to what? It's referring to esrog. Oh, and that's a stira. Why? Because again, Rabbi said, because that just follows the flow of the brisa. It was talking about esrog before, and therefore the comment is about esrog. Now, why is that a stira? Because we just said before that even though Rabbi Yehuda holds that a lulav does not have to be hadar, he does agree with what? That an esrog does. So how does this shtim? Because you're telling me before, Rabbi Yehuda holds that an esrog has to be hadar, and now based on this price, so the esrog does not have to be hadar, to which the Gemara says, no, lo, alulav. You're right, that statement of Rabbi Yehuda was not referring to esrog. When he said that even a dried item is usable for the mitzvah, it wasn't referring to esrog, rather, what was it referring to? Lulav, which Rabbi Yehuda actually allows the Braisa to read a little bit better, because now why? Now it makes sense why Rabbi Yehuda then introduces that story in the next state. What was the story about? Dried lulavim. So after Rabbi Yehuda says that what? That you could use a dried or withered lulav, he says, oh, I'm going to support that assertion. How? I'm going to tell you a maisa shahaya kachaya. It happened that people used dried lulavim, to which the Rabbanan responded, Shashadchak. Don't waste my time with that, right? Meaning, again, that was a shashadchak, that was extenuating circumstances, you can't bring a raya from there. So I will say, therefore, the way we leave off over here is, Rabbi Yehuda is still on the same page, that although lulav does not require hiddur, and with that, he argues with the Rabbanon, everyone agrees that what? That esrog does. That's what we're holding so far. So the Gemara analyzes the braisa. The Gemara says, Amar Mar. That's what we said before. Kishem shein pochs in mehen, kachin mosif na lehen. What do the braisa say? The same way that you can't add on or you can't detract from the dalad minim, meaning you can't decide to add, roses or tulips or something else to it. The same way that you can't decide, you know what, I don't like how the aravos look, I'm going to take them away. Kach in mosif and alein. So you can't add on another species. So Mar says, Peshita, that's obvious. What's the chiddush over here? Ma'od tema, what would you have thought? Hoil v'am Rav Yehuda, lulav sarich eged. I might have thought like this. Since lulav requires a binding, lulav, now I guess we haven't decided definitively on that issue, but since we say that lulav requires needs to be bound, v'imaisi mina achrina v'hailuchudekoi. I might have felt like this. Rabbi will say, when can't I bring another species if I'm going to go ahead and bind that in the binding? But let's say I want to do the following: I'm going to bind up my lulav hadassim and aravos, and what? And I want to bring tulips, but I'm not going to include them in the binding. So I might have thought that if I'm not going to include them in the binding, then what? Then what? Then the Lamaisa should be okay. Why? Because as long as it's not bound together, it's not considered to be as one of the species. And therefore, again, it's not baltosif. Kamash malon, no. Kamash malon, that even if you hold lulav tzarech eged, and all the species have to be bound together, the act of taking something else, even if it's not bound together with the rest, is still problematic. Amar mar, lo matza esrog, lo yavi, lo rimo, lo parish, lo davar acher. We'll say it's very interesting. So the Braisa said if he couldn't find an esrog, you should not go ahead and bring a pomegranate or a quince or anything else. The Gemara says, Pshita. Like, what's, that's obvious. What's, the mitzvah is esrog. Meaning, why would, I would say, again, is there a havamina that if I don't have tefillin, that I should go ahead and construct tefillin out of black construction paper and tie it around my arm? Or I should tie a rope or a belt around my arm for it. If you don't have an esrog, you don't have an, what's the havamina that you would substitute it with something different? This is very interesting. Mao de tema. I might have thought that that maybe I should go ahead and use something else in order that the concept of esrog not be forgotten. Well, say this is so profound. They have to understand something. We live in such a dramatically different age. Our nisayon, right? Not nisayon, but our challenge is, you know, do you want to buy an aleph, a beis, or a gimel? You know, what kind of esrog do you want to buy? How much money do you want to spend? You know, I'll say, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that. Again, not even so long ago, where, again, you know, certainly in pre-war Europe, very often there was one esrog per town, and everybody would go ahead and use that particular esrog, and that was it. Many beautiful stories about that. That was it. So what the Gemara is saying over here is, I guess already Chazal understood that this is the kind of mitzvah that, because it depends where you're living and what crops there are, it's quite possible that there may be times, for example, where people don't have esrogim. So I might have thought that there should be a substitute in order that what? That the concept shouldn't be forgotten. It's a fascinating idea that we don't want the concept of esrog to be forgotten, and there's a reality that communities en masse will not have esrogim, so maybe there should be a backup. You're not going to make a bracha on it. But at least, again, there should be something that people should not forget the concept of esrog. Kamash malon, zinnin denafik churba mine, da'asi lemisrach. To which the Gemara says no, and therefore, so that's the Havamina, that I would substitute something else. Kamashon, that I'm not going to do that. Why? Because both says sometimes that could backfire terribly. How could it backfire terribly? That people will think, oh, you know what? It's okay. I'm going to go with the pomegranate route. It's a lot more economical. Right? It's just, I mean, again, so therefore, because it could ultimately actually undermine the mitzvah, therefore Chazal said you can't use anything else. So the Gemara says the following. Tashma literally means zimnin denafik churba mine. Sometimes it actually will end up being destructive. Da'asi lemistrach. People will become accustomed to using these other items, and it will fundamentally undermine the mitzvah of dalad minim. Tashma, esrog. Esrog hayashan pasul. If you have an old esrog is not kosher. It's pasul, probably because it's lacking hiddur. Rabbi Yehuda says that it is kosher. Tiyufta dirava tiyufta. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the Gemara says over here, now here you have an explicit statement of Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that lamaisa esrog does not require hiddur. Here it's explicit. Esrog does not require hiddur, to which the Gemara says, tiyufta dirava tiyufta. This is a refutation of the position of Rav, because what did Rav say on Amud Aleph? Rav said that as much as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan argue about lulav, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that what? That esrog has to be hiddur. Here it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda does not agree with that. So the Gemara says, "V'lo boy hiddur." Is that true? That Rabbi Yehuda does not require hiddur. V'ha anan tana. But we learned hayoro kikarsi. If you have an esrog that is green as a leek. We'll get into this later on. We'll discuss the actions, big machlokesim, with the proper colors for esrog, and we'll discuss it. But if you have an esrog that's green as a leek, Rabbi Meir says that it's kasher. Rabbi Huda says that it's pasul. So why is it pasul? Lav mishum debay hider. Is it not because it requires hider? And therefore, you see from here that even Rabbi Huda requires hider by an esrog. To which the Gemara says, lo mishum de lo gomer peira. You know why? Because they will say a green esrog has not yet matured. Because it's not yet matured, it's not yet called an esrog. Say Rabbi Huda says it's a fundamental. It's a pagam in the identity of the item. Tashma, sheer esrog katan. What's the shear of an esrog? So the Gemara says the bottom shear, the lowest shear of the esrog, the smallest shear. Rabbi Meir Omer ke'egos. Rabbi Meir says that's at least the size of a walnut, of an egos. Rabbi Huda says kebeso, the size of an egg. Lav mishum debay hader. Now, why does Rabbi Huda say it has to be the size of an egg? Is that not because less than an egg is not hader, and therefore Rabbi Huda holds that there's hider by an esrog? No, lo mishum de lo gamar peira. Same idea, because Rabbi Huda holds that if the esrog is less than the size of an egg, it means it has not yet fully matured. If it has not yet fully matured, then the mice, again, it's not yet called an esrog. Tashma,
Ubigadol, what is the ceiling? What's the largest shear for an esrog? Ubigadol kedei shiyochas shnayim biyado achas to Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda says the largest shear for an esrog has to have the ability to hold two of them in one hand. Rabbi Yossi says afilu echad b'shtei yadav. Rabbi Yossi says no, an esrog could be so big, Rabbi Yossi, that even if you need two hands to hold one. So Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Yehuda holds the largest an esrog could be is you have to be able to hold two of them in one hand. Rabbi Yossi says no, it could be as big as you want, even if you need two hands to hold one esrog. Now, why does Rabbi Yehuda require that the esrogim be small enough that you can hold two in one hand? Is it not because that's muhudr, that's a nicer esrog? Lo, that's not the reason at all. Kevan d'amarava, lulav b'yamin v'esrog b'smal. Because the Rabbi said, you have to hold the lulav in your right hand and the esrog in your left. Rashi points out over here, the reason for that is because the lulav has more mitzvos associated with it. Lulav hadasan and aravos. Therefore, it goes in the right hand, which is considered to be more chashuv. This is assuming you're right-handed. And the esrog goes in the left. Zimnin, but what happens? Zimnin de mechafile, va'asi lafchinhu. So va'asu leifsule. Because let's see, who holds like this? What's going to happen? Sometimes you're going to pick up the lulav and esrog in the wrong hands. And what's going to happen? You're going to have to switch them around. So we'll say, your esrog has to be small enough to be able to allow you to maneuver the esrog to the other hand and the lulav to the other hand. If the esrog is too large, what will happen? You'll fumble. What happens if you fumble around with it? It's going to fall down and you're going to invalidate the dalid minim. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, what does he do with the fact that the pasuk says pre-eitz hadar, which indicates to us what? That lamaisa, the esrog, does have to be hadar, it has to be beautiful. Oh, I'll tell you the following. He says, hahu hadar bi'ilano mishana l'shana. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't understand hadar as being beautiful, but rather Rabbi Yehuda understands that hadar actually identifies the esrog. How? What's the nature of the fruit of the esrog? Hadar be'ilah mishon l'shana. I will say esrog is very unique. An esrog fruit, even when it matures, does not fall off the tree. Other fruits, when they mature, they often fall off. Esrog does not fall off. You have to pluck it off, which means if you leave it on, what happens? It stays on. Rabbi Yehuda says that's what the pasuk means. Pre-eitz, not hadar, but hadar. Hadar means what? One that literally lives on the tree from year to year. So we'll say what comes out is that Lamaisa, Rabbi Huda disagrees with the Rabbana on both counts. Number one, Machlok is about Lulav, or Machlok is about Esrog, really about Esrog. Rabbi Huda holds it doesn't have to be Hadar. The Rabbanan say it does. And therefore, again, by extension, the Rabbanan who understand that the pre-eitz Hadar of Esrog, Hadar refers to beauty, understand that the Torah equates the Lulav with the Esrog. Just as the Esrog has to be beautiful, the Lulav has to be beautiful as well. Whereas Rabbi Huda, who holds that hadar doesn't mean beauty, hadar means hadar, it lives on the tree from year to year, therefore there's no hekish to be made, and therefore just as esrog does not need hidr, so too again lulav does not need hidr as well. I will say just very quickly, because we only have literally a minute, I just want to share with you, I have sheets of this, so if you want you can take it afterwards, but the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Simin Tav Reish Lamed Zayin, going back to what we learned before, sukkah gizula ksheira. I will say, we paskin that a stolen sukkah is kosher. If Kate said, what's the case of a stolen sukkah? In takaf al chavera va'otzia misikaso, I grabbed Reuven by the lapels and I threw him out of his sukkah. Ugazla v'yashavba, and literally I stole it and I'm sitting in it, I'm living in it, and again, I'm very firm, I'm sleeping in it, I'm learning in it, I'm doing everything in it. I'm not moving from it. What's that? Lacha yatsa? Why? She'ein hakarka nigzelas. Because of also, we paskin that real property cannot be stolen. And because real property cannot be stolen, therefore, technically speaking, if I steal someone's sukkah, lemaisa, again, I am yotze with that. Similarly, he says, Shulchan Aruch, im gazel eitzim va'asa mehem sukkah, if I stole wood, and I fashioned that wood into a sukkah, af api shlo chibron. Even though I didn't nail it down, I didn't cement it down, I didn't change anything with the wood, yotza, I'm still yotze, takanas chachamim. Takanas chachamim she'en lebal eitzim ela demea eitzim bilvad. Because halach lemaisa rabbi say this falls under takanas marish, takanas shavim, that once you build wood into the structure of the sukkah, I get to keep the wood, and all I'm obligated to do is what? Is lemaisa refund the value. All right, we'll stop over here. So we treat that the same. Everything we treat as built into the structure. And that's, even though, again, it's not nailed down, it's not still part of the structure, you only have to give the value.